Good morning. This is Focus 580, hour number two of the show. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers, Harriet Williams and Martha Deal, Henry Frayn is at the controls. Human embryonic stem cells are the only known cells with the ability to become any other type of cell. With the discovery of this amazing potential, scientists increasingly believe that some of the most revolutionary cures for the body have been hiding inside the body all along. This morning in this hour of the show, we will talk about this emerging, ever-growing field with science writer Cynthia Fox, and we'll be talking about some of what you will find in a newly published book that she has authored. The title of her book is Cell of Cells, The Global Race to Capture and Control the Stem Cell. The book is published by W.W. Norton. It came out a few weeks back. Our guest is an award-winning science writer. Her work has appeared in a number of different publications, including Fortune, Wired, Rolling Stone, Esquire, The Scientist, Engineering and Medicine and Biology, Life and Discover. And she's joining us this morning by telephone. As we talk, questions are welcome, as always. The only thing we ask of people who are calling in is that people please be brief in their comments, and we just ask that so that we can keep moving along and get in as many different callers as possible, but certainly callers are welcome. 333-9455 is the number to use if you're here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are. We do also have a toll-free line. That means if it would be a long-distance call, use the toll-free line and we'll pay for the call. So that's 800-222-9455. Again, in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455 and toll free 800-222-9455. Ms. Fox, hello.
Hello.
Thanks for talking with us.
Thank you for having me.
We appreciate it. From time to time we've talked about this, and this is one of those cases, and perhaps there are others, where I expect that there, as many times as we have had this conversation and as much reporting as there has been about stem cells and the issues connected to stem cells, that there are a lot of people listening who are still not quite sure what stem cells are. What they do, what you can do with them. So with that in mind, let me start by asking some very basic questions. Okay. The most basic question of all, I suppose, is, well, what is a stem cell?
Okay. We'll talk about the most potent one, and then we'll go to the somewhat less potent one.
Okay.
The most potent one of all, as you noted earlier, mm-hmm. is the embryonic stem cell. It comes from spare embryos created in IVF clinics. You know, people go into an IVF clinic, they want to have a baby, sperm meets egg, and the doctor makes a few extra embryos. It just so happens that you come out with a lot. They freeze them up, they store them, and then they used to be thrown away when the people didn't want them anymore. What they discovered in 1998 is that you could take out of those embryos that are due to be thrown away something called the embryonic stem cell, which can form any other cell in the whole human body and is immortal. It can replicate endlessly. It's a very robust, fascinating, wonderful cell. So that started a whole big hullabaloo because everyone wanted to work with these cells, but President Bush thought it was immoral to work with the cells because they came from embryos. And later we can talk about the fact that there are conceivably some ways in which we can get embryonic stem cells in a slightly less controversial way than that one. Anyway, so they're the most potent ones. Then, hiding within our adult bodies are older, tired, but very interesting adult stem cells. And the adult stem cells hiding in each one of our tissues can only form the mature cells of that particular tissue that they come from. So skin stem cells can only form functioning adult skin cells. But we have found that if you take them out and you proliferate them a little bit in the petri dish and you put them back in, you can actually do some good work with these cells. They're more tired, they can't replicate as much as an embryonic stem cell, and they cannot form the whole variety of cells in the body, but they are also fascinating and interesting. And my book argues we should be robustly funding both kinds of stem cells.
Mm-hmm. And also now there, you can get stem cells from the blood of umbilical cords, and
yeah.
there are efforts to get people to donate that so that that kind of work can be done. How do they rank in terms of their usefulness in this lineup between the embryonic stem cells and adult stem cells?
So the jury is still out on them as to whether you should spend a whole bunch of money to preserve them the rest of your life, because the companies that are saying to you, saying to everyone, come here and store your stem cells with us, your cord blood stem cells with us, are now starting to charge an awful lot of money for that. Mm. Although not all of them. Some of them are pretty good. The company ViaCord, I think, in Boston is one. CryoCell in Florida is another one that charge a little bit less than the other places. However, it makes logical sense, I think, to try it. That's my personal opinion. And the reason for that is these stem cells that come from the umbilical cord blood, they are adult stem cells, the more tired ones I was talking about, because, you know, the baby is 9 months old at that point. However, obviously, they're more robust and perky than your own, right? I mean, than mine, certainly. I'm of a certain age, and if I had stored my umbilical cord blood stem cells, I might be a happier person today. Who knows? I haven't gotten a disease yet, but the limitation there is that they have not yet figured out how to make those cells proliferate robustly so that if they had saved my umbilical cord blood when I was a tiny baby, it wouldn't be much good to me right now because I need a whole bunch of them because I'm a big, tall adult. However, you freeze them up, you hold on, science is going to advance, kaboom, it may work later. And for your child, if your child gets some kind of disorder that stem cells could help at age, you know, 2 or 3 when they're very little, actually those umbilical cord stem cells could help. So it's a trade-off.
Okay. Now, let's go then take a step back and talk a little bit more about adult stem cells. Here, as you said, there are a lot of interesting things you could do with them theoretically. They still have a lot of power, maybe not as much as embryonic. But if you think about the fact that if you have somebody, their kidneys go bad or one of their kidneys go bad, if you could take their kidney cells and grow them another kidney, this would be a good thing. They would have another kidney and you could put it in their body and the body would say, oh, I know this. This is for me. So you wouldn't have the problem with rejection. There would seem like great potential to do great things if you could figure out how to do it.
Right. Yes. And the thing is, when it comes to adult stem cells, we actually do have a lot of clinical trials out there, and they actually are doing some really cool things. Now, the very far right wing would have you believe that they're the answer to everything, that adult stem cells actually can replicate as much as embryonic stem cells and can form all the different cells. And the primary literature simply does not back that up. No way. You really do need to robustly fund both kinds of research. However, even despite the fact that good scientists say these cells are more limited, all kinds of things are going on right now with adult stem cells that are spectacular in saving lives, most notably via bone marrow transplant. See, adult stem cells have been around. We've known about them much longer. We've known about them for 30 or 40 years, and we've been giving people bone marrow transplants to replace their tired old bone marrow after cancer treatments, and it's been saving thousands upon thousands of lives for quite a while now, the stem cells in bone marrow. They reconstitute the immune system very well. It's very exciting. Another area in which adult stem cells are working right now are for patients in the last stages of heart failure, and heart failure is the number one killer in the Western world. They are taking, and I've watched these operations all over the United States, in Texas, in Boston, at Columbia University here in New York. They're taking bone marrow stem cells out of your hip, taking this little corkscrew and putting it in your hip and taking out your bone marrow stem cells. These cells, among them, are stem cells that can form blood vessels. They stick them in your heart if you are in the end stage and you've tried all the drugs and they haven't worked. You don't want to do this if you know you can take a statin and everything's fine. They stick them in your heart, and what ends up happening, they do believe, based on the animal studies, et cetera, is that new blood vessels are formed in the heart. So, you know, your coronary arteries can get all clogged up and you can replace them, but then, you know, you can't replace them anymore. Well, these little stem cells grow little blood vessels. They believe that's what's happening. Or they're causing the heart itself to rejuvenate and form some blood vessels. Either way, the key seems to be blood vessels, and it seems to be working in many different patients. Again, when it comes to that, that's very new, and all these different hospitals are trying out all different kinds of doses, all different subsets of the stem cells that are in the blood. So it's a very experimental phase, and you want to stay away from it if a statin can help you. But adult stem cells are doing some pretty cool things in the clinic already, largely because we found them so much earlier, and the United States government funds that area of research enormously.
Mm-hmm. So. How much are we talking about? How much money?
We are talking between the period of 2003 and 2007, $1 billion were put into adult stem cells versus a mere, I think it's $1.6 million No. 160 million, yeah. Mm-hmm. Around 160 million for embryonic. Bush does, in a very, very tiny, tiny, limited fashion, allow for federal funding of the more potent embryonic cells. But, of course, as everyone knows, nowhere near as much as he should be. I mean, many people believe he should be putting $1 billion into embryonic stem cells as well every year.
Just very quickly, let me introduce again our guest, science writer Cynthia Fox. She is the author of a recently published book, Cell of Cells. It is about the global race to capture and control the stem cell. That's the subtitle. It's published by W.W. Norton. Questions are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Well, as you explained, of these various kinds of the two kinds of stem cells, adult and embryonic, the ones that are the more powerful, the greater potential, the greater interest, certainly as far as researchers are concerned, is with the embryonic cells, because these are those that have the potential to become any other kind of cell.
Yes.
And as you said, the main source of these are going to be from frozen embryos that are created to try to help people who are having a difficult time having a baby. You take sperm and egg, you put them together, and you get them, and you make more of them than you think that you're going to need. And we have a lot of these things that are in storage that previously they were considered to be medical waste. They were just thrown out until we get to the point where this discovery is made that, hey, there's something really interesting going on here. How is it that, in fact, even though we knew about adult stem cells, how was it that it wasn't until 1998 that scientists caught on to the fact that these embryonic stem cells are there and they have this remarkable potential?
Well, we did discover the mouse embryonic stem cell way back in 1980 or 1981. And there is some debate as to why we did not immediately then begin looking for it in the human. You know, you could say maybe half of all scientists thought, well, it's just in the mouse and it isn't in the human. But the other half were very concerned about the political atmosphere in the United States. Maybe not half. But there's been quite a history of the United States not being very willing to put any money whatsoever into embryonic research when it comes to humans. And I guess it was in the 70s that IVF first began, but it was pretty controversial here. And there have been all kinds of laws set up at various stages not allowing for a lot of money, federal money, if any at all, in many cases, to go into any research whatsoever on human embryos because of the far right. So scientists were afraid to go into that area, but they also weren't sure that it even really existed. And then Jamie Thompson out of the University of Wisconsin just slowly started wading on in. He found the monkey embryonic stem cell in 1995. He published that paper, and that led him to automatically think, well, you know, where's the human? So he established, a lab, yeah, he did, separately from his university, funded by private funds so that he wouldn't get involved in any government, you know, interference saying you can't work with embryos. And he started working with some spare IVF clinic embryos, and they were also working on them abroad, but Jamie Thompson got there first, and he found them in 1998.
Mm-hmm. So we have talked about the fact that here these cells, these embryonic stem cells, have the potential to develop into any other kind of cell that's in the body.
Yes.
How, though, do you say, let us say we have in front of us, we have a Petri dish. I don't even know if we could do it like that. We have a Petri dish of embryonic stem cells, and we decide we want them to become heart tissue, or we want them to become the tissue that's in the kidneys, or you know, anything else. How do we tell them that's what we want them to do?
Right now, it's mostly sort of an intuitive kind of thing. What these ESLs do when you clump them together in a Petri dish and let them alone is they form things called embryoid bodies. And if you look at them, literally just by looking at them through a microscope, you can see that some of the cells are taking on a neural phenotype, as in brain cell, and you just sort of cut them out literally with a little, with either an enzyme or with a little tiny knife, and you put them in a separate Petri dish, and voila, you've got a Petri dish of neural cells that turn into neurons. Fascinatingly, as well, you will see that some cells in there are thumping. And you cut those out and you put them aside in another dish, and oh my goodness, that's a dish of heart stem cells. Now, of course, what they're trying to do is there are zillions of scientists out there, not as many in the United States as there could be because of our restrictions here, but all around the world, people are throwing all different kinds of growth factors at these cells very categorically and slowly, trying to find out which growth factors to add to their petri dishes to form the more mature tissues of the various parts of the body. And there have been two, Israelis have done two very exciting papers that have proven the at least the functionality of embryonic stem cells in a way that's similar to what I just described. One done over there by, Lior Gepstein. He actually created, out of embryonic stem cells, pacemakers for pigs with hearts that beat arrhythmically. Mm-hmm. He's able to use the embryonic stem cells, pop them in there on little patches, and they began beating properly for the heart and convinced the pig hearts to beat properly. And then another scientist over there called, is it Rubinoff? Yes, it's Rubinoff. Created embryonic stem cells that could form dopaminergic neurons that helped out Parkinson's mice, not Parkinson's people yet, but Parkinson's mice, alleviated some of the symptoms. So it's moving, and abroad people are putting more and more money in and gathering steam. While over here things have been slowing down, although of course California has recently put some money into stem cells. I don't know if you want to talk about that yet.
Well, let me just, I have a somebody who here who's calling in with a question, so I want to get to them. Just the real quick, we have touched on, and I'm sure we can talk more about what's going on here in the United States. There is research going on, although it has been affected by the controversy, the issue of those people who say, well, you get a sperm and an egg together, you've got a person. And so to get the stem cells, you have to destroy the embryo. And their argument is that that's a person and you're killing a person and we don't want to do that. So for that reason, then, at least that's the reason that the president has said, aside from existing lines, we're not going to put federal money into doing that kind of research. There are places, and one of the things that's interesting about the book, I think, is that you look at scientists all over the world who are doing this work. How can you make some comparison between, let's say, the amount of money that's being put into this kind of research in the United States compared to the amounts that is going into this kind of research in other places?
Interestingly, so Singapore is putting, it recently, in 2003, it held a $1 million embryonic stem cell research conference. It's very rare to spend $1 million on a conference. Singapore is just pouring money into this area. It hasn't resulted yet in any spectacular papers, but they're pouring money in. They are not attracting as many Western scientists as they'd like. You may have heard of a few problems with censorship over there in Singapore. It kind of bothers scientists a little bit that, you know, you can't chew gum, things like that. Or you can't spit out, yeah, you can't even chew.
Yeah, don't spit it. Well, don't spit it out on the sidewalk, that's for sure.
That's for sure, right. But so they haven't attracted as many Westerners as they'd like, but they've created this huge complex called Bio something or other, Bio City, spooky, scary thing, 7 huge, tall buildings. Stem cell research going on in several of them. So that's a big one. Israel is doing a spectacular amount of work, even though actually it doesn't have much money, but it actually is getting a certain amount of money actually from the United States, various United States groups. And they're just their laws over there are quite free, so they're allowed to do an enormous amount of work over there. China's doing some work that is kind of scary, but there is a U.S. scientist called Wise Young, who is organizing up a whole bunch of Chinese scientists who have just been throwing stem cells around left, right, and center, and is organizing them and is teaching them what to do in terms of clinical trial rules and regulations, et cetera. So there's a lot of thought that in the future, in the very near future, some very exciting things may come out of China because of the collaboration between frustrated U.S. scientists and Chinese scientists who have so much more freedom. So those are a few examples of the different countries.
All right. Well, let's talk with some callers. We have someone on a cell phone to start us off here, line number one. Hello.
Hi there.
Hi, yes.
A quick question, then I will hang up. My question is, what does this little critter look like that we're calling an embryo? If we're at a point, or the thing is at a point where the cells have not differentiated, and I think that's what I'm hearing. Is that really an embryo? That's it. Thank you. I will hang up and listen.
Okay. Yeah, it's a three to five-day-old blastocyst. Hello?
Yeah, the phone line, it's supposed to hang itself up, but it didn't. So, yeah, we're here. You're there. Go ahead.
Great. Okay. It's a 3 to 5 day old blastocyst. So you could say, sure, a tiny bit differentiated, I think, because the inner cell mass is embryonic stem cells, but the outer the cytoplasm is more differentiated cell. So yeah, you can call it an embryo. Now, the thing is, first of all, it's being thrown away. There are three points I'd like to make on that. First of all, it's being thrown away in the case of the United States and what these people in the United States would like to do and can't. What's the second one? Hold on, there are three points. Well, and the second one is that a company called ACT came out with a paper in Nature very recently that is controversial but would seem to be a good answer for the future. What they were able to do, and they've been able to do this in mice as well, is they're able to, in that three-day old blastocyst, take out one single cell, and then you put the blastocyst back into the little mouse mother, and the mouse mother gives little babies, and the babies are all fine. And that little one cell is actually a stem cell, so those little babies have their own stem cells for the rest of their lives, because one embryonic stem cell can be multiplied millions of times over. In clinics right now, people are actually, it's called a pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, and people are actually having one cell taken out of their blastocyst in that blastocyst phase, to check for genetic abnormalities. And then if there are no genetic abnormalities, then that little blastocyst minus that one little cell is put into the woman. The woman has a baby. And there are kids walking around there now 20 years old who had that one cell taken out, and they're fine. And that one cell, it turns out, you add a few growth factors to it, and that's an embryonic stem cell that can be replicated millions of times. So eventually in the future, I mean, right now it's just being used to check for genetic abnormalities. But people are thinking that in the near future, once people settle down and calm down about this whole issue, women are going to start freezing up those spare cells and creating for their children millions upon embryonic stem cells, and it's completely non-controversial. Now, I have to add that a lot of embryonic stem cell scientists don't like to talk about this because they're afraid people will say, okay, then we'll just wait for that to happen and let's shut down all research. They're so excited about their research, they want to move on it right now, so why not use these embryos that are going to be thrown away in the meantime?
So, as I understand it now, we're not talking about the fact that if you have a frozen embryo, you could thaw it, you could take one cell out, and you could refreeze it. You're talking about it, when you first create that blastocyst, you take some cells out, and then if you were going to preserve it, then you would freeze it, and then you'd have, but then you'd still have to decide sometime later what you were going to do with it.
Well, no. So what this technology allows you to do, I think no one would want to do that. You freeze up that blastocyst to, like, you know, as a source of stem cells for yourself. No. But, again, when you're doing IVF in the clinic, you know, when you have to have a doctor put your sperm and your eggs together in the dish and suddenly he's creating all these blastocysts, what he can do before he puts one in you to form a baby is he can take out a single cell, just one cell from that little blastocyst, put the blastocyst in you, it grows up to become a baby, and the thing is, right now what they're doing is just destroying that single cell, just looking at it, destroying it. But you can freeze that one cell. That one cell is essentially an embryonic stem cell. So when that kid grows up at age 20 and maybe needs a new immune system, you can thaw out that one embryonic stem cell, which would not form a baby, it's just a little embryonic stem cell, and create millions of embryonic stem cells out of it, and he has his own tailored embryonic stem cells right there. It's a completely uncontroversial way to get embryonic stem cells, although I have to add that, again, the far right doesn't like you to touch embryos in any way, right, because maybe you could cause some harm to the embryo. It is being done on a daily basis now to just check for that cell being taken out, to just check for genetic abnormalities. That we'll probably be using that in the near future to freeze up just embryonic stem cells now, not the whole embryo, just one little stem cell, to create an entire supply of embryonic stem cells that are tailored to our babies. And it has not resulted in any embryo being killed.
So then theoretically, you're going to assuming that you had the money to do this, I suppose, you could establish a little cell bank for every human being so that if they needed the cells, they would be there. Is the thought there, though, that some of those cells could be taken and developed as a commercial kind of a... Of course, then we get into issues of who those cells belong to, but the idea that you could take them and then you could develop a commercially available line of cells from those cells.
Yes, you could, and that will happen as well, and there's going to have to be a lot of talking. I mean, right now, certainly Geron, the company Geron out in California, is a commercial company working with embryonic stem cells, and not taken this way that I was just talking about, but through the... from IVF clinic embryos that are due to be thrown away. And so they're using a bunch of those lines. And a bunch of those lines are approved, actually, by Bush. And they are going to file for an IND for what will probably be the world's first human embryonic stem cell trial that should go on early next year if everything falls into place. I was just at the big, huge bio conference the other day, and several people were talking about that. And that will be for spinal cord injury. That will be the first one. But, yes, commercially for this other use, too, yes, and it's going to have to be a lot of talking. What I like about that little... that idea that I was talking to you about, this whole pre-implantation genetic diagnosis thing that's going on right now, and instead of looking at it, that one cell you're taking out for genetic abnormalities, just freezing it up and having it as a store of embryonic stem cells for your kid, the rest of the kid's life, you could strike a kind of deal with the government and have the government say, look, because it's so expensive to do IVF in the first place. I mean, you have to do it all yourself, $15,000 yourself to have a baby. Through IVF, you'd have the government say, "Look, you want to give me, us in the government our stem cell bank. A few of those embryonic stem cells will pay for the rest of your embryonic stem cells and your whole IVF procedure, done properly with a whole bunch of ethics committees involved, and everyone talking in serious tones year after year. I think this whole thing could work very well."
Cynthia Fox is our guest. She's a science writer. Her work has appeared in many places, including Fortune, Wired, Rolling Stone, The Scientist, Esquire. She is the author of a recently published book, Cell of Cells, The Global Race to Capture and Control the Stem Cell, published by W.W. Norton. We have callers. Others are welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Next, we'll talk with someone in Champaign. This is line two. Hello.
Hi there.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm actually following up on the conversation you've had for the last few minutes. It seems to me the opposition to stem cell research is that thing could actually become a human being, could become a baby. And it seems to me that actually anything that we would be using in stem cell research is not an embryo inside a woman that's going to become a baby, then in fact it would take her Herculean efforts in many cases to have that become a baby, and if we don't do stem cell work, that's going to be thrown away. Am I right?
Right. Well, the embryonic stem cell itself can't turn into a baby, but the embryo that it comes from, of course, can turn into a baby, yeah.
And is that something, in the ones that are out there, are they going to become a baby if we don't do stem cell research, or are they not?
Oh, yeah, that's the point. These are the ones that are destined to be thrown away. After 5 years, most clinics will just simply throw them away, and those are the ones that scientists would like to have, the ones that are destined to be thrown away. Now, a much greater percentage are still waiting to become babies. The parents are like, we're waiting for them to become babies.
Right.
But there's a percentage of the 400,000 out there, it's 2% or something, that are destined to be thrown away, and they're, for some reason, the far right wing would rather see them be thrown away.
Okay, thank you.
All right, let's go to the community of Belgium, not far along away from here, line number four. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
With your last comments with the guest there, you got into the question I was going to say, and these things look like they could be extremely valuable very quickly. I mean, drug companies now make enormous sums of money off of new drugs. Obviously, something like this would lead to a lot of money for them if it could cure whatever disease it may be, it sounds like. Now, what I'm getting at is, why don't we just turn them loose? And we don't have to worry about the government paying for it.
So, so that in effect, in many ways, is what's going on in the United States right now. It's not banned here. There's just a very stern restriction on federal funding. But sure, companies like Geron can do what they want. Pretty much, yeah. And the thing is, they're not. I mean, so Geron is. It's one of the very few that are. But Big Pharma is not getting involved, and many companies are not getting involved precisely because the way it is always done is the NIH, which is the biggest funder of medical research, basic science medical research in the history of mankind, is not getting involved. And the very fact that the NIH isn't involved because of the Bush thing makes all the Big Pharma companies afraid of the politics. They're afraid to get involved. Now, there are other reasons, too. Cells are unwieldy creatures. You know, the drugs that we have now are tiny little molecules that we will take, we'll dig up a molecule out of the sand and throw it in our bodies. It's tiny little molecules, easily made, 7 cents a pill, et cetera. Stem cells have to be fed. They're it's weird. They're little creatures, even though they're not. A stem cell cannot form a baby. It simply cannot. But even adult stem cells need to be fed on a daily basis in the petri dish. They're living things, and so it's all much more expensive. So that whole model is beyond them right now. Big Pharma. Big Pharma is sitting back and looking at these tiny little biotechs, tiny little struggling biotechs, to see what they're going to do. Usually they sit back and watch struggling tiny little biotechs and the massive monstrous NIH, but the NIH isn't behind it, so they're watching a much smaller pool of individuals work on the cells.
Thank you very much.
All right, thanks for the call. Just people will recall, I'm sure, that the Bush administration reviewed the policy, and the administration said, for the reasons that we've discussed, they don't think that in the future federal money should go into this kind of research because it involves destruction of the embryo. However, the president said existing cell lines, these things that then went on to be called the presidential lines, the existing cell lines, those that were already there, he said, well, it's okay for federal money to go into research using those cell lines. Then, though, I think, though, ever since there has been some question about, well, how many of these lines are there, and are there sufficient within those existing cell lines? Could we just say, well, okay, we'll just work on those, and that'll be fine? I mean, is that enough of a stock to do the research? And that's one question. The other is, in fact, are there even as many cell lines as the president said there were when he made his decision?
Right. Famously, no, there are not. There never were the amount of, he said there were 60, I guess. This was back at August 9th, 2001, famous date in stem cell land. It turns out now it's down to like 12. It goes back and forth between 6 lines and 12 lines. One of the reasons is that we had no idea what we were doing back then. So we were mishandling and misusing the cells, and they were spinning out of control. We have a lot more control now. We know a lot more about what's going on. But among other things, those original lines, all of them, were bred on mouse feeder cells, cells made out of mouse cells, which means that they are potentially, well, that they are contaminated with mouse cells, and you don't necessarily want those to go in your body. Now, what you can do, they have discovered, is that you can reculture them over and over on human cells, so you can come up with a batch of cells from those original mouse-contaminated cells that don't seem to have many mouse qualities in them. But it still makes people quite uneasy. Then there's the fact that these cells can spin out of control, and they can go cancerous and things like that when you don't handle them properly. And then there's the fact that there are all kinds of different, we're all very different. All of our bodies are different. And you need a huge supply of different kinds of embryonic stem cells to really get an idea of how these cells on average work. So for what it's worth, this first clinical trial that is going to be occurring, theoretically, sponsored by Geron for spinal cord injury, supposedly next year, they will be using two of the Bush lines, H1 and H7, I do believe, or H1 or H7, I don't know which. Mm-hmm. They will be using it, and what they have done is they have cultured it repeatedly in some kind of more human culture so that they have theoretically gotten rid of the mouse contamination. But certainly, most decidedly, certainly, you don't want to. You want to, you know, start all over again with some fresh, wonderful lines done by people who now know what they're doing.
All right, let's go to another caller here. This is someone in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. May I address the previous question? Why can't industry do the job?
Okay.
There's a very good reason. They will do only research which has an immediate or at least very quick payback. They have to do this this way. The fundamental basic research, which is far more important, is only going to be done in university labs or foundation labs, and that means public funding.
History says he is exactly right, yes.
Thank you.
All right. Again, other questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. You've talked about the fact that many other places around the world, research is going on and significant amounts of money are being spent. We also talked about the controversy here in the United States involving the source, the frozen embryos, the source of the embryonic cells, and the consequences of destroying the embryo. In other places, in other countries, is that a particularly controversial issue? Do they argue about that? Do they not argue about it? Is it not an issue at all?
Sure, lots. I was surprised running around the world like that at how much arguing there is going on, because I was led to believe you sit here and you read the lay press over here and you think, oh, the rest of the world is just, you know, pounding ahead, has no problems with it. Of course, there have been discussions in many, many countries. Israel, one of the reasons why they're so far, they've done so much work for such a tiny, tiny country, is they had a whole bunch of discussions. And the discussions were between people of Islamic faith and Israelis, and in both those areas of religion, it is not believed that the soul is formed at conception. It is variously believed that the soul is formed in day 40 or day 120, but certainly not a conception. And so, therefore, it was easier for them. I mean, both believe that, so Israel was able to take off. Still, in Islamic countries, though, there is some infighting going on for other reasons. They actually have problems with adult stem cells. You shouldn't, or certain adult stem cells, you should never, in some countries, they believe you should never use cells from the dead. There's just a taboo about that, and so that can sort of get in the way. But Hinduism seems to have no problem with it. I think it may be the whole idea of reincarnation. You might, it's a good thing to the cycle of life, to reincarnate living material, living matter, and Judaism is similarly all right with the whole issue. The countries that seem to have the big problem are the very Christian countries, and certainly the very Catholic countries. So Ireland has problems with it, Italy has problems, Slovenia has problems, certain European countries have problems with it, and that has caused research actually in the European Union to be a little slower than you might have thought.
That's go to another call here, and this is also where Bennett, this is line number two. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I have a friend who lives in India, and every time there's some adverse stuff going on in the U.S. with regard to stem cells and abortion, I get an angry email from her saying, there's so many people starving in this world and who aren't being taken care of, and children are just not being adequately taken care of. Why is the U.S., the country I respect, being so obstinate about what priorities should really be?
Yeah.
I agree with her. I think you're preaching to the converted.
Yeah.
Go preach to somebody else. But the, I think it was last year or so, I was looking up what the failure rate was of fertilized eggs normally in human beings. And I was just using the internet, and I came up with a number of sites, and the failure rate is at least 50% of
yes.
the number of fertilized eggs that just don't make it. And I would imagine that this is part of natural selection. Either the environment isn't the best in the uterus, or there's a genetic defect that is too severe in the developing embryo.
Right.
But it's even higher when you are transplanting embryos back into the uterus.
Right.
So the Right to Life people ought to be getting upset about anybody who is creating embryos, because even if you reimplant them, all of them, only 25% are going to survive
right.
in the uterus. So you have a destruction of fertilized eggs. And I suppose the Catholic Church is anti artificial insemination. I mean, in vitro fertilization.
Yeah, it is, although many Catholics are not against it. It's one of those issues.
Well, you know, I've had Catholic friends use this sort of argument with me, but the Catholic Church has its own representative to the United Nations. Vatican does. It is the Conference of Bishops has a tremendous amount of influence on U.S. reproductive policy.
Yeah.
And it influences the fact that we aren't contributing to the United Nations Population Fund so that more people can have access to birth control because of the abortion and anti-birth control stance of conservatives and the Catholic Church. But it does seem to me to be an issue of whether we're talking. I always hear the talk about innocent life as though once you're born,
you're not innocent, right?
Not innocent anymore.
Right.
And now I've just lost my train of thought. But it just seems to me to be totally, the emphasis is on the wrong stage of life. And there is, when I was looking for this information about success rate, I did see anti-abortion websites that were promoting adoption of fertilized embryos,
yes,
fertilized eggs, and calling them snowflake babies. And Bush himself has been pushing this. Although it seems to me that there are children in this country who need families, who are already here. There are thousands of kids who need families and who are already born. So anyway, that's my little soapbox. David has heard me say these things before, but you haven't.
Yes.
Thanks very much.
Sure. Just to comment on the whole snowflakes thing, I think it's actually a great idea. That 2% figure I use is actually old. Now many more people, now that they know about embryonic stem cells, would have those spare embryos used for embryonic stem cell research. But a certain other percentage and a certain other percentage would indeed put them up for adoption, and I think it's a great idea. I really do. I mean, there are a lot of children that need adoption in this country, but adoption is very hard, and certainly getting a much younger baby is a very hard thing to arrange for. And a lot of people would just love this option. So I think, I mean, there's plenty of room for all those things to happen. I mean, when they do all the polls and the studies, they find that a certain percentage of people would prefer to put the little embryos up for adoption, a certain percentage would prefer to give them up for research, et cetera. They're not being allowed to put them up for research, and they should be, I think. That is my opinion on that. But there's room for all of it, I think.
We talked about the fact that, obviously, because of the controversy that we've discussed, there have been a lot of constraints put on federal funding for this kind of research.
Right.
However, in various places around the country, in state capitals, they don't have a problem with it. Back a couple years ago, in California, they approved a proposition that provided money, state money, to go into embryonic stem cell research. I think just yesterday I saw an item in the New York Times about, is it Massachusetts,
yeah,
that's going to do the same thing, or talking about doing the same thing?
Yep.
Are there more places, more state governments, where they say, we think this is a good thing, we'd like to see researchers in our state work on this, and we're going to put state money into it?
Yes. So let's see. Spitzer in New York, when he was campaigning, Governor Spitzer said he would like to put, I do believe it was at $1 billion into stem cells, and so we're going to see if that's going to come through. Of course, California with its $3 billion, and I was just talking to one of the people behind that initiative over there. There have been some lawsuits, but they're finally shaking out, and by the end of the year, by November, they're hoping the lawsuits will be over, and they will be able to release that giant $3 billion equals, over 10 years, equals $1 million a day. It's going to be incredible, just a huge amount of money. But if it doesn't happen by November, and they're thinking that it will, because they've won all kinds of lawsuits, and there's just one stage left, Governor Schwarzenegger has said he would step into the gap and just fund it. So California is just huge. All kinds of people are moving there. Everyone's very excited, and they can do all kinds of, they're going to be able to do all kinds of embryonic stem cell research that they haven't been able to do before in the United States. New Jersey and Connecticut are two more states that have put money into it. New York, and I think there are more following. Maryland has put some money into it. Slowly but surely, they are beginning to follow.
Is this some of the kind of discussion about the potential for embryonic stem cell and this kind of research, is this clouded at all by the way people think about cloning, particularly the
yeah,
potential for, even though this is in a sense a separate sort of issue, and we're not talking about therapeutic cloning, but the kind where in theory, and there's a long way between, you know, the theory and the practice, but in theory you could clone a human, you could clone an entire human being. Does that, and concerns about people have about whether that should or shouldn't be done, setting aside the fact whether it can be done, gets in the way of assessing about and thinking about the issues involved in the kind of research that we're talking about here?
Yeah, and it always bewilders me. I just don't understand that, because even if there was such a thing as human cloning, which there won't ever be, because it's just too complicated to turn back. What cloning is all about, one way or another, is you take an old cell, like take my nose cell, and you take out the nucleus, which is basically the engine of the cell, right? Yes, and then you put that old nucleus into an enucleated fresh egg. So you've taken out the nucleus of that fresh egg, you put in my old nucleus in that. And that fresh egg, miraculously, turns back all the genes in my cell turns back the clock on them to the embryonic stage, and theoretically then a baby is formed. Now, that's never happened with humans. It has happened with all kinds of animals, although the success rate is like 1% and 2% in these animals. And many of them do have all kinds of genetic abnormalities, although not all of them, but many, if not most of them, really do have all kinds of genetic abnormalities. Whether it's ever going to be able to be done perfectly is just such a distant thing. Anyway, the fact that people get all hysterical about it makes no sense to me. I just don't understand it. Even should we get to the point where we could do it with humans, which we won't do anyway, it's just a twin. All it is, I mean, if it were a human clone, it would just be a twin. However, the reason not to do it is not from my perspective, therefore you'd create an army of people who are exactly alike because environmental factors play such a huge role. Mm-hmm. But the fact that this really is, I mean, turning back all the, how many genes do we have, 30 to 40,000 genes, and then each of the genes do three or four different things. Turning back all those genes perfectly, it's just never going to happen. Now, when it comes to research, though, that's a very useful tool because what you can do theoretically is see, like if you have an Alzheimer's, a cell from an Alzheimer's patient, you can turn back the clock. You take the old nucleus out and you put it into a fresh egg. You turn back the clock on that old Alzheimer's cell and perhaps see how it began. We don't know how Alzheimer's begins. But if you can turn back the clock, maybe you can see that first genetic mutation that led to the second, that led to the third, that led to the fourth. It may help us understand why all kinds of diseases begin, how they start. So I've never quite understood why people get hysterical about it, but it's brought up very often, and people mix it up with just this regular stem cell research we've been talking about. I mean, you can get embryonic stem cells, a kind of embryonic stem cell, from a cloned animal embryo. But how normal is it going to be? It's just it's a whole side area that basic science researchers are interested in so they can find out the origins of disease. Nobody wants to make human clones, but people just use it to make people hysterical about stem cell research in general, I think.
All right, let's go to Bloomington, Illinois, line number one. Hello.
Yes, I just have one statement, one comment. I don't quite understand why we have to harvest children for the stem cells. Embryonic stem cells, when a child is born, those same stem cells become adult stem cells. So my question is, why can't they wait until after the child is born instead of harvesting children to get the stem cells? Why not use the adult stem cells right after birth? And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Well, we did talk about that a little bit at the beginning, this distinction between embryonic and adult cells, but maybe it'd be good just to review that again.
Right. So so the embryonic stem cell is far more potent. It can form, all the different cells of the body, and it can replicate endlessly. And among the other problems with adult stem cells that are hiding in our older bodies is that many adult stem cells are believed to be the causes of many cancers, because when a stem cell is one of the few, is the only permanent cell in the body that can replicate. And when a cell replicates, it has to replicate all 3 billion letters of its genome each time. And each time it does that, it makes a mistake. You get four or five mistakes in the right areas, and that's called cancer. And sometimes you get one or two mistakes in the right area, and that's called cancer. So it's being found that adult stem cells, the old guys that are in us already, are the cause of many cancers and may well be the cause of other kinds of diseases. In my chapter on the heart stem cells that I was talking to you about, I mean, using bone marrow stem cells to create blood vessels in the heart, it has also been found, though, that bone marrow stem cells can contribute to atherosclerosis, which is the number one killer of people out there. So adult stem cells, old adult stem cells, because they start off fairly potent, when they go awry, they're pretty dangerous. Whereas embryonic stem cells are much more robust, and while they can form things like teratomas, if you control them properly, they're just more robust, and they're less likely to break down and spin out of control, et cetera. And again, though, using the phrase harvesting children, I mean, we've gone through all the different that last woman brought up the topic that I had forgotten to bring up, which is the number sometimes even goes up to 70% spontaneous miscarriages occur in women all the time. We miscarry all the time. So the far right wing, I mean, should they be very upset at that? They should be very upset at God for having women spontaneously miscarry 70% of the time. And again, we have this future sort of controversy-free option coming up. Mm-hmm. So you've got these embryos, they're sitting there, they're going to be thrown away, they probably wouldn't form babies anyway, and again you get a repeat, they're going to be thrown away.
Yeah. Well, just we're almost out of time here. Just again, to get back to something we talked about before, in about a minute, how far away do you think we are from some kind of a therapeutic application of stem cells?
With adults, ones we are doing against cancer and with the heart and things like that.
But for embryonic.
Embryonic, again, Geron, it's a very reputable company and it's a very exciting thing, is filing for an IND for embryonic stem cell, first embryonic stem cell clinical trial in the world. It's going to be for spinal cord injury patients beginning at the beginning of next year. That's going to be the first one. And then there is a company in California doing fetal stem cells actually right now. That's, I believe, the first legitimate fetal stem cell clinical trial going on for children with Batten's disease. A company called Stem Cells, Inc. was behind that one. So things are starting, conceivably, to move.
All right. Well, we will leave it at that. If you're interested in reading more about the progress in this particular area, you can look at the book that we have mentioned. It's titled Cell of Cells, The Global Race to Capture and Control the Stem Cell. It's published by W.W. Norton that goes into how this technology has developed and indeed profiles a number of scientists around the world who are doing the work. Cynthia Fox is our guest. She has written for a number of publications, Fortune, Wired, Rolling Stone, Esquire, The Scientist, others, and the new book is just out. And Ms. Fox, thank you.
Thank you.